Serbia, being threatened by Austria-Hungary, brought in the great Slavic big brother of the Serbians, the Russian Empire in the east. The Russian Empire's activation of its diplomatic and military resources in turn encouraged Austria-Hungary's Germanic big brother to intervene. Imperial Germany now declared itself interested in this conflict as alliances now were coming into effect. As Germany faced the anxiety of the great nightmare of German politicians coming true, of war on two fronts potentially, both against the Russian Empire as well as against France, Germany preemptively began to move against the French Republic. Even voices urging peace were now drowned out by the urgent imperatives of military plans for mobilization. Mass armies had to be put on the move and rushed towards the frontiers. Timetables of railroad movements planned down to the minute had to be kept to. Plans for peace could gain no purchase. Now, the popular reaction on the part of the masses or crowds of Europe really form a significant and in many ways riveting story in the psychological history of modern societies. In August of 1914, in that long, beautiful summer, the news of war, the realization of those omens of conflict that we discussed in an earlier lecture, were met in European capitals, not by crowds of quiet, ashen-faced individuals crying or worried about what this war might hold, but rather crowds that celebrated, that were whipped up into waves of enthusiasm. In the capitals of Europe, in London, in Paris, in Berlin, in St. Petersburg, crowds gathered to cheer, to wave flags, to sing national anthems, to greet young men who were rushing off to recruiting stations, and to praise God that war had arrived at last. In some sense, this reaction, so foreign to our own, had much perhaps to do with a sense of a long-lasting fear of war that had preceded 1914. This tension had finally broken and perhaps contributed to this odd symptom of mass hysteria, which historians have since called the August Madness of 1914. Now, historians have been careful, especially in the last years, to point out and modify the popular vision of the August Madness by emphasizing that this enthusiasm was not universal. Clearly, it did not monolithically sweep up everybody in all European societies to cheer for war. At the same time, however, the evidence of photographs and contemporaries remains and has an element of truth to it. The spontaneous mobilization of the combatant countries was great. Many contemporaries would later recall this as one of the most sublime moments of their lives, a moment when the divisions in society had been overcome, when crowds were no longer divided into classes, but rather French stood united with French, Germans with Germans, Russians with Russians, and British with British. Even that analyst of crowd psychology, Canetti, had pointed out that the crowds of 1914 in some sense represented a new phenomenon of mass mobilization. From now on, wars would be mass wars, he argued. The enthusiasm for this new conflict was also reflected not only in the spontaneous celebrations of the streets in European capitals in August, but also in a remarkable spontaneous propaganda. Governments, in some sense, didn't even have to organize an outpouring of patriotic enthusiasm in 1914. Ordinary members of the societies in Europe would very willingly do so on their own. It's emphasized, for instance, that in the first months of 1914, German newspapers were flooded by 1 million patriotic poems pledging Germany's commitment to the struggle. I might mention among those 1 million poems some of truly incredibly horrid quality.